Six Mile Grove has been making roots rock Americana for more than 20 years and has released 7 albums, including the latest in January this year called Million Birds. They played in camps and clubs on the waterfront and First Avenue. If you want to see them live, head to the West End Market during the Minnesota State Fair, August 26th and 27th, and you'll see them there. But for today, we welcome them into the KBXC studio in Bemidji and Center Stage, Minnesota. Here's Six Mile Grove playing Patrol Cars.
Thanks for having us, Barry.
When I hear the sound of your heart leaving, I'm not bleeding. That's what you said. The fall is cruel and crisp with color. I can still smell her in my bed. The new year came in waves of bright concussions. We were still rushing right past ourselves. Careful, dear, that dream you lean in so hard for, it comes with a dark door straight to hell. Patrol cars round the square, here, here, there, there. Old man, watch your clocks of a hole that wasn't there. Cars round the square, here, here, there, there. Oh man, watch the clocks of a hole was in there. Come with me to the dim and the smoke, the bar lights. The ghosts we don't fight are the ones who win. Can't say I blame her, but she's gone and out of danger. I'm in the crosshairs of the fool I've been. Patrol cars round the square, here, here, there, there. Oh man, watch your clocks of a hole that wasn't there. Patrol cars round the square, here, here, there, there. Oh man, watch your clocks of a hole was in there.
That's 6 Mile Grove on Center Stage, Minnesota, with their song Patrol Cars. And is it watching the clock?
Yeah.
We did a misheard lyrics song on thing recently. And I wanted to make sure I got that right. Watching the clock.
Watch the clock of this hole that wasn't there.
Wow, that's pretty cool. I like that. Well, thank you guys for being in today. It's really fun to have you here. I have to ask this really weird question because that's just what I do.
Yeah.
If I had to go from here to Lyle, Minnesota, which you put on your webpage right up there in your bio, it's in the first line. Where am I going?
You're going to the opposite end of the state.
Yep.
Dead center, on the border.
Oh, it's on the border.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Lyle, Minnesota, population 504, straight south of Austin, Minnesota.
Okay.
Which is Spamtown, USA.
Yes, of
home
course.
Of the Gear Daddies. We are 10 miles south of them.
All right.
And there's a liquor store on one of our albums, Bumper Crop, where we took a picture in front of the on-off liquor store, which was very popular back in the day because it was one of the only places where you could swing in before going to Iowa and get, like, a road beer.
Oh, funny.
You know? And so everybody knows where that on-off liquor store is.
I know what a road beer is, but I've never heard it called that before. That's awesome.
They even give you a glass of whiskey and a styrofoam cup with a lid and a straw.
Oh, that's
high
great.
Class.
But it's not there anymore?
It's there.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I don't think they do that anymore.
They may not. Darn liability insurance. Well, that's Brandon, and Brandon Sampson, you are founding member of the band.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
And it started, have you read Jeff Tweedy's book?
I haven't.
He has it for Christmas, but I
haven't read it yet.
It'll be funny when you read it, because one of the things that happened to him is he got a crappy guitar and he gave up playing it, and then he injured himself, and then he had to learn how to play guitar because he had all this time on his hands, and you have a story like that, too.
I do, yeah.
Tell us that story.
So when I was 9 years old, I grew up, my brother and I grew up, my brother's the drummer in the band, Brian. He and I grew up on a hog farm in Lyle, just east of Lyle. And in the middle of winter, I was helping my dad when I was 9 years old, cleaning out some hog crates. And my job was to hold the big cattle gate while my dad backed the skid loader in and out. But I got in the way of the skid loader and ended up him backing into my hand and smashed it between the gate. Pretty nasty. And spent a few weeks in the hospital at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester and put my hand all back together. 9 surgeries later, a bunch of therapy, and the surgeon finally said, told my parents I should learn how to play guitar or piano, keep my fingers working, and I can't straighten, anymore.
I'm
showing you now, over the radio.
We're looking at it over the radio.
It's shorter, right?
Yes.
It was happening when I was a little guy, but I can bend it.
And it's your left hand, which is doing all the stuff on the top of the guitar.
So I can do the important things, like kind of move relatively quick. So I just started playing guitar. And my brother got a little jealous, so my parents bought him a drum set early on. And then he brought a friend home from school, Barry Nelson, who they grew up together in the same class. And we started playing years, really, before this band was formed.
Yeah. And do you remember your first thing you called yourself as a band then?
Oh, yeah.
Did you have a funny name? I'm sure you might have.
We do. It was Rhythmic Ties.
Nice.
Right? That was our first band. And it was a problem because we would actually get paid to play gigs.
Really? Right? And at what age are we talking?
I'm talking, how old were you, Barry?
Oh, maybe eighth grade, ninth grade, something like that.
Yeah. So those two are in ninth grade, and I was a few years older than them. I was the only one. I probably couldn't even drive when we first started
playing.
So we get drove around by our parents. But we'd play it, make a couple $100 playing for a church picnic. And then we'd save our money all summer. And then we'd go record ourselves.
Nice.
Right? Like down in this cool studio in Springfield, Missouri, where we had some relatives live. And so we have all these old recordings of us playing songs, that no one really should have done. For us, but they did, and we learned a lot.
Were they cover songs, or were they your own originals even then?
Yeah, we started writing even back then, but nice. our first cassette that we put out was 3 songs. It was a song that I wrote called Ride of Life,
nice.
And then Elton John's Your Song, and a Beatles song.
Wow.
I saw her standing there.
And did you try to sell those to friends?
Well,
and at gigs?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we sold tons, and I hope somebody tries to sue us for it because
that's
we never paid royalties on those. So we brought those. We sold tons of cassette tapes. I'm going to put one in the mail.
That's
and
hilarious.
Send it to you guys.
That's awesome.
You have a way to play it?
So, oh, yeah. We can do it. That's so great.
I mean, they're coming back.
There's another Minnesota singer that I know who all of his four-track recordings that are all long gone, you know, the original cassettes that he did for all those years. That's his lamenting of Spotify, you know, is by attacking with his old cassette recordings.
That's perfect. It's a perfect way to do it. You know, so like every so often when we have big shows around, like our hometown will bring out all of our back stock, you know, that's currently sitting in our barn studio.
That's
and we'll
hilarious.
Put out like by the year. And I mean, there's just cassettes and CDs that should never see the light of day, but they're going to.
Oh,
my
gosh.
It's pretty fun.
That's awesome. Well, that's great. None of that was what I was going to talk to you about. So let's just sing another song.
There you go. You got a little preview out of that deal.
You have a song called "Early Morning Rain." Is it?
Yeah.
Is it Gordon Lightfoot's song or
not?
It
is not.
Okay.
What I've started to do is just find like other artists' titles
and borrow them.
Just borrow them.
Nice.
And hopefully, you know, people get confused on the internet and they search for that song title. And what's the next song title that we came up with? We had one that Beyonce uses.
Good idea.
You know, just something very popular, you know. And like, I think I'm going to write a song. I got an idea for one called Fishing in the Dark. And I'm just kidding. But do we have a second for just a bit of a story on this one? So my great aunt Atlanta grew up in the farmhouse that my brother and I were born in. I mean, we come from generations deep of the Samsons there from, you know, years and years. But she in particular was a very good artist at an early age and was always kind of this, you know, eccentric person. And she left the farm single and headed out to New York City and lived there her whole life in search of her dream to become an artist, painting, oil paintings and things like that. And you know, went years as a teacher at the Art Institute, hung out in, you know, the 40s, 30s and 40s with all the artists, and in fact saw the original screening of Lawrence of Arabia.
Wow.
Which started to melt during the original screening in New York, and it made such an impression on her that she went home and she painted like 28 versions of this, right? So all these years, no one knew about her. She was 87 years old, got a call from her older sister in Toterville, Iowa, is if you just keep going a little past Lyle, cross the border, 3 miles down is Toterville, a town of 50 people. And her older sister was sick. She asked Atlanta if she'd come home and help her. And so Atlanta, who was all by herself in a one-room studio apartment in Greenwich Village, decided to go back home at 87.
Wow.
Gave up her teaching. She was still teaching at that age, you know. And the deli that she was living above decided to throw a little going-away party. So they hung up some of her pictures, and some guy walks in. And before you know it, he goes up to her apartment and sees all of these stacks of paintings. In bags, rolled up canvases in bags, floor to ceiling with a tiny path going through, thousands. And he starts going through them. And, you know, she just said she could never stop. She just said art to her and painting to her was as necessary as eating and breathing. And she never needed any, you know, recognition for it. She just did it. Well, she got her first art show at 87 at the Smithsonian.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
And then now she has two, she's passed away a long time ago, but I actually sang at her funeral, and that was the first time and probably the only time that CNN and the New York Times were at the Six Mile Grove Lutheran Church down in Lyle, Minnesota to see to witness her funeral and to talk to all of her family.
Wow.
But I was writing this album, writing a lot of songs. I was looking for a couple more songs, and I thought about her, and I thought about just her persistence, right, in the art, and draw it. It kind of brings back these thoughts to me about we've been doing this 20 years, and we just do it because we love it. We do it because we have fun doing it, and that we have a commitment to each other to write the best songs that we can, no matter who gets to hear them. And sometimes that's good enough. And I kind of had this idea. I was like, you know, I wonder if she never got married, but I wonder if she maybe had a love that she left behind, you know. And so I made up the song about what that might have been like. And this one's called Early Morning Rain.
Wow, it's 6 Mile Grove on Center Stage, Minnesota.
She took off for the city and left all that she knew for the bright lights and the big time of the avenue. It didn't take long, she didn't wait long for her star to arrive. It's funny how it always happens overnight. Sweet like the early morning rain. It sounds different without her, but to her it sounds the same. It gets harder, can't stop her, don't want it to change. Still, it's sweet like the early morning rain. For years I heard nothing, then one day it arrived. A painting of blue skies and babies like what she left behind. It didn't take long, I didn't wait long before I gave her a call. It's funny how it's like she never left at all. Sounds different without her, but to her it sounds the same. It gets harder, you can't stop her, don't want it to change. Still it's sweet like the early morning rain. She told
at 6 Mile Grove on Center Stage, Minnesota, with their song Early Morning Rain. And we're happy to have them live in studio in the Bemidji studio at KBXE here on Center Stage, Minnesota. So you guys, Brandon, you guys have been together for a long time as a band. And I think all of us think, well, how do bands do that? Because, I mean, anybody that's on the inside of the industry anyway is like, how do bands do that? Because there's so many bands that come a couple of years later, they're gone. You know?
Yeah.
How does that work for you guys?
I think our secret to success is no success. Honestly, I say that because we haven't had a hit song, so people are still actually interested in what we're going to come up with next, you know, and we're stubborn guys, right? And we love playing music together. And we just, this is what we do. We all have day jobs. We're all dads with day jobs, right? And we committed to be the best band of dads with day jobs that we can be. And if we're going to get together and we're going to write music, we might as well like it. And we do. And just enough good things really have happened to us along the way to give us hope, to give us motivation, and to keep us going doing it. And, you know, even early on, even when the Rhythmic Ties were on the cutting edge of, you know, what was next in the music scene, here comes, in Lyle, Minnesota, here comes along this guy named Desi Wallace, right, who was sent to our band because we thought, you know, the only thing we really need is a bass player. Brian and I and Barry were sitting around, and so Barry's dad went down to the local liquor store, and at the other end of the bar was Desi's dad. And they got to talking and figured out that one of their sons played in a band, and the other one was a bass player looking for a band, and they made the deal. And the next day, Desi showed up at our doorstep with his bass guitar, and he could not drive yet, so his mom gave him a ride down, like, all the time to our great-grandma's farmhouse. And he was like, okay, enough of this. We need to change the name, and we need to start playing our own music, and you guys need to listen to me on what we're going to do. So he kind of stepped in, you know, and just joined the band in 1998.
Wow.
And it's never been the same since. And then 9 years ago, the same kind of thing happened. We're all sitting around, you know, looking for maybe an additional musician to play. And along comes John Wheeler, who's just like a gift of awesome pedal steel playing and color, and has been just a great addition to the band. And since then, this is how it is, and this is what we do, and we love it, and we're gonna just keep doing it.
That's awesome. I appreciate that that information in the background, because it's hard. It's hard to do both things: working, being a dad, and being in a band. That's like three full-time gigs right there.
It is. And this summer, it feels like it. You know, we put out a new record, and we do have conversations. Okay, we're going to play X amount of shows a year, and then I do several solo shows, you know, with John or Desi or Barry, whoever. But this summer, you know, it's like 40 shows, and it's great. And that's what we want when we put out new music, and we want people to like it. And that's why we're up, you know, up in this neck of the woods. Super glad to be up here playing this area.
We're glad to have you here too. And your most recent album is called Million Birds. I encourage people to go out and get a hold of that. And we're talking to Six Mile Grove. You can find them in the usual places. And thanks for being here.
Yeah.
It's really great to have you here. And good luck as you continue to fill out all those shows this summer.
Yeah, thank you. It's kind of fun. Like when people go into our website, and if they purchase music from our website, it's literally me who walks from my house to my barn, and I open up a box of vinyl, and I take one out, and I'll put a little note in it, and I'll put it in the mail, and it shows up at your doorstep 2 days later.
That's great.
So it's a small operation, but we send records all over the world. You know, we got a great publicist overseas and one here in Twin Cities, and it's really been a fun little ride.
Good. I'm glad. Well, tell us about this last song, Wage a War.
Yeah, so you know, one of those things that happened good to us during our career is that we ended up becoming good friends with Bob Wooten, who was Johnny Cash's lead guitar player from 68 to 98. And he took us under his wing right about the time we had about had enough of playing 4 or 5 nights in a row of bar gigs for 4 or 5 hours a night. We took a little break. We said, let's just focus on the craft, and we wrote the record Bumper Crop. Shortly after that, we met Bob. He took us under his wing, and we became his opening act and then backing band playing all classic Johnny Cash tunes.
Nice.
And he's so great, you know. And he taught us a lot. But one of the things that he taught us was just write what you know. And he said, stick to your guns, write what you know, and let the rest take care of itself, you know. And so a lot of the songs, all the songs on this record are just truth. They're just honest observations or thoughts or things that happen to normal people. And we kind of disguise them as, you know, mid-tempo Americana.
That's good.
And this is one of those. This is called Wage a War.
Trying too hard, I'm trying to win, trying to wait to see what I get. Tried to be faithful, and once I was strong, once I believed, turns out I was wrong. Well, I can't hear the lies in the middle of the rage. Scared to death, figure out why. Nothing left to prove, nothing left to give. Hard to wage war when there's no way I can win. Hard to wage a war when there's no way I can win. I called to say thank you, I called you to see if there's something I left, if there's something you need, if there's something we missed, dear, like a chance to survive, a chance to forget how part of us died. And I can't hear the lies in the middle of the rage. Scared to death to figure out why. Nothing left to prove, nothing left to give. Hard to wage a war when there's no way I can win. Hard to wage a war when there's no way I can win. I can't hear you asking when you speak, like everything to me, everything is wrong. We almost had it all. Hours and hours of love, piles and piles of mud. It's time to let it rust. And I can't hear the lies in the middle of the rage. Scared to death to figure out why. Nothing left to prove.